Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, so I'm excited to share this episode with you. This is an interview with Thomas King. He's one of our provider attorneys out of Northern New Jersey and New York City. Actually, lately he's been doing New Jersey because we started sending him leads in New York and he was making a 1 hour commute and that ended up not working out for him. He even tried hiring contract lawyers and, you know, tested that out. But, you know, he's someone, you know, as we talk about in the episode, that is not a manager. He doesn't want to be a manager. He wants to work with clients personally. And so we've had a lot of attorneys come on the show and talk about how they're expanding their practice, hiring new associates, hiring new contractors, and some of the upside and the benefits and how that can really benefit and grow a practice. At the same time, you know, it's really valuable to hear Thomas's thoughts that, you know, there's, you can behold the possibility, but also beware of some of the challenges that come with growing a practice, scaling up a practice. It's more people, it's more management. There's some things that come as costs as well. And so this is a really good episode for attorneys to kind of hear the things they're going to want to consider before they start, you know, expanding across the entire state or opening up whole new regions or, you know, growing tenfold. You know, there's lots of upside, but there's lots of things to watch out for as well. And so Tom and I have a really great discussion on that. The other thing we cover in a great deal of depth is dealing with courts that where you have judges or court systems that have not fully adopted or embraced unbundled services, despite or regardless of the fact that ethics opinions from the Supreme Court and the state bars fully approve of attorneys offering unbundled. On the local scale, there's still judges, there's still courts, there's still scenarios in which they aren't going to be as easy to adopt and make it a little bit more challenging. You might get the call from the judge that says, why are you not representing this client? You know, how do you handle that call? You know, and how do you, you know, draw the line between, you know, offering certain options in a court, pushing the boundary and having those conversations, and maybe also making sure you're protecting yourself in areas where unbundled services, while, you know, fully ethical on the statewide level, can be challenging to implement on the local court level. So we have a full discussion on retainer agreements, how to send letters to the courts, how to make sure you're really, you know, clear with the judge and with the court when you file, whether you're doing a limited appearance. We have a really lengthy discussion on offering limited appearances. And that's, again, something else that varies state to state to state, county by county by county, as far as, you know, what you may run into as far as challenges and, you know, what are some of the benefits of offering limited appearances and how to make sure you're protected in the process. So there's a lot of really practical and important considerations in this episode that you're going to get from this that are part and parcel to offering unbundled services in an emerging trend, an emerging industry where, you know, certain courts and certain counties are emerging at different paces. So really valuable episode. Let's get right into it. This interview with Thomas King, one of our provider attorneys out of Northern New Jersey. All right. Hey, Thomas, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have this chat. We've got, we just figured out we got about one solid year under our belt, and it's been a fun process of exploration to new regions and looking at the areas that work well. There's been lots of lessons learned and lots of lessons gained. So looking forward to exploring all of it, and I appreciate you taking the time to share the story.
Oh, my pleasure. It's definitely been a learning experience. You know, as I've honed my practice and what Unbundled has been able to do for me, you know, providing the leads that have that's really the, you know, the foundation for my practice. And I'm looking forward to sharing, you know, things that have worked for me again and things that haven't, and maybe help some people along that path.
Okay, great. So where I would usually start with is just to give a little bit of background, how you got your start in the practice of law, but maybe a good place to start would be to share a little bit about some of the global travel we do. I mean, I think a lot of our attorneys know that, you know, most of the team members we work with at Unbundled Attorney, we're a distributed team. We've worked from many different countries around the world, though nowadays we're spending a little bit more time in U.S. and Canada. But I understand you were quite the digital nomad as well.
I have been. You know, I tried to stay in school as long as possible. And so I got my undergraduate degree and then went to Europe and started a PhD in a branch of linguistics called philology. And I actually studied Middle Old German. And the reason that I ended up doing that is there were just great scholarships that the German government offered. So I spent, 4 years, working on a PhD in Berlin. This was back in the 80s, right before the wall fell. And it was a hedonistic time, to say the least. And that's sort of what led me to the law. Is I was meeting with one of my advisors as I was working on my thesis, and he said, Tom, you love language, but you're not going to fare well in academia because it's not it's all about who can publish and who can raise the most money for the university. You just love, the study of words and how they work and their meaning. And he recommended, think about the law. And so I put that in my back pocket. I came back to the States after, traveling around, Asia, North Africa, Europe. And then when I got back, I ended up in New York City and ended up going to Fordham Law School. When I graduated, I started the DA's office, which was a great opportunity. Within 6 months had, half a dozen trials under my belt. And the only problem is they just didn't pay anything. And I had a baby on the way, a new wife, and that's when I went to work for the big insurance litigation firm, where I was incredibly unhappy. They put me in a cube and was miserable. From there, I leveraged a relationship and ended up becoming a general counsel for a broker-dealer in the city and spent about 10 years doing that. And then, as often happens, life takes a change, got a divorce. I'm a single dad with three kids, and I was traveling into New York City, never seeing my kids. And I had, come to realize that that model for being a lawyer in corporate America, if you have kids, really relies on being in a partnership with somebody, because they'll just work you to the bone, and you get home and it's dark and you leave when it's dark and you end up paying a nanny to raise your kids. And I decided one day that I wasn't going to do that anymore. And I had always, thought about family law as being something that I wanted to do. Part of it was having gone through a bad divorce on my own. Part of it was having special needs kids and having dealt with, school districts and care providers. And so that falls under the umbrella of family law. Mm-hmm. And I tried to downsize as much as I could, sold the house, took a little bit of money out, and hung my shingle up. And it was about a year of absolutely doing nothing except appeal work for law school friends to help keep the lights on. And then Graham called me, and my life really changed, because he said, I've got a lead generation, service that we want you to try. At the time, I was really peppering all the bulletin boards, Avvo, law.com, trying to give advice to people, when people were out there saying, well, if you want to start your divorce, tell you what, start your divorce, I'll look over your papers, and you can submit them on your own. And, unbeknownst to me, I was trying to offer unbundled services because that's where I saw an opening. There were, too many other, in a saturated field of family law, too many other people that already had the referral from business associates and, within the bar. And so I was really looking for that niche. And so it really fit well for me when Unbundled stepped in my life. As we discussed earlier, at first there was an opening for Unbundled Services in New York. And since I had been a DA there, I had contacts there, it was an hour commute for me, but that's what I took. And I found that just didn't work for me because the travel time was just too much. You get a lead generation that you come in, you sign them up as a client, and a lot of unbundled services for within family law, they tend to be post-divorce modifications, whether it be Child support, alimony, visitation, custody, you know, those are the big four that people come in for. And the model of being price competitive, you know, for them, for those services, you can't spend all day in court for that one client. You need to be able to either before the appearance or after the appearance get back to the office and do other work, or it just doesn't make financial sense, you know, for you to provide that service for the price point that people need. And for that reason, it really doesn't, it didn't work for me to be able to travel that far. Another aspect that I learned the first few months of working with Unbundled was, you know, you're going to get some leads that pan out, you know, and some that don't. And then you're also going to get that gold nugget that walks in the door every once in a while. Somebody that says, you know, I've got a legal problem and here's my checkbook and fix it for me. And that if it was just the post-divorce modification leads that came in, it would be really tight. And it's those other cases that people that come in with a divorce where there's, you know, a business or, you know, investment properties or things where the other side is putting up a fight and it requires motion practice, multiple appearances, that you generate enough revenue in order to maintain, you know, and pay for, you know, the leads that don't work out. Mm-hmm. Other things that I've learned was you have to be really careful with your retainer agreement and set out your, the boundaries for what you're representing, and to remind clients that's beyond the scope if it gets there. And if it does and they want to sign you up for a second thing, you know, that's what you need to do. I have several unbundled, you know, clients that came in as leads, and I did, you know, part of the work. And when they needed, you know, additional work, well, that's a different retainer, and let's lay that out. And we do that so you don't have to, you know, pay me a giant retainer and say, well, I'll be your on-call attorney for the next 2 years. And being able to break that down, just being cognizant of when you're an attorney and you sign that retainer, that you signed up for a lot more than maybe you realized, and just being aware of that.
So. Right. Yeah, there's a few things I want to wind back to that I thought were really important that we want to explore a little further. First, what you said, you know, was really interesting is when you first started hanging your shingle, you were offering, you're on Avvo, you're on these different sites, you know, offering to, you know, help people by reviewing documents or helping them handle some parts of their own. And you said you saw an opening there. Can you describe a little bit more like what it was you saw at that time was the opportunity to start offering these types of limited scope types of options for clients?
Yeah. You know, there's a whole generation of people out there, and not only, you know, generationally, but the internet's changed the practice of business, and it's changed the practice of law because people get starts, and they think that if they can do the research, they can, you know, fill out the forms that all the New Jersey courts, you know, or New York courts, you know, have, that they'll be able to, you know, usher their case through. And some of them can, but many of them can't, because it's, you know, doing it once, it's almost impossible to get all, you know, dot all the I's and cross the D's. And letting people know that. Oftentimes they've gone onto these sites to say, hey, I've started this, what do I need to do to complete it? And, you know, reaching out and offering that service, saying yes, because a lot of attorneys will not, do an unbundled service. And I like to for certain reasons. One, I think there is a need for everybody to have representation, just from a broad philosophical ideal. You know, I've volunteered, you know, to represent indigent, you know, clients once a month, you know, every Wednesday, fourth Wednesday of the month. You know, I'm down there helping people. And I apply that to my general practice as well, in that, you know, you've come in, let's see what we can do to get you through the legal system to the result that is fair and just, and in your favor to where possible. And if that means that you represent yourself and I help you, then let's do that. you know, being open to that, you know, definitely, you know, brings in business, and it can sometimes even be an easier return because people pay you, you know, for that hour of your time or for that 2 hours of your time, as opposed to, okay, they've negotiated down the retainer and we've agreed to $100 a month, you know, to make up the difference. And, you know, 3 months later, they've stopped payment because their debit card's no longer good and you end up making the calls. So the true unbundled service, you know, has almost 100%, you know, return on time investment. People are willing to pay for it because they feel like they're getting great bang for their buck, which they are. And you don't have the problem with collections that you have with a lot of things, and you're helping people through the system. I offer, you know, unbundled service for preparation of documents, for filing of motions, you know, for briefs on the law. And I also offer an appearance, you know, an unbundled appearance. And I tell people, you know, hey, if the other side has an attorney, and you show up in court because there's an oral argument, you're really going to be in a disadvantage. And sometimes we need to break it up. Yeah, you'll file everything and then bring me in day of. You know, let me be the hired gun that shows up at the OK Corral because I know the attorney on the other side. And while they're fair, they're still, you know, the judge is going to give them deference. And no matter how many times you've read, you know, the AVO primer on, you know, custody, there are local rules of court, and there are local rules by judges as to what is acceptable in court. And going at that pro se is very difficult. And, you know, usually people are open to that, you know. So
yeah.
I hope that answered your question.
Oh, it does. Absolutely, Tom. And I think this really takes things in a direction that we can really explore further. And you mentioned something a little earlier that I think would be really valuable within this aspect of the discussion, which you said you wanted to be careful about the way you structure retainer agreements and also with the way that you set expectations with the client. And then also you're offering limited appearances. So there's just a lot of, you know, I think there's a lot we can unpack there to get into the practicality of how attorneys can offer unbundled services, the ways in which they can structure these types of agreements, you know, with the types of options that you're offering. You've got document preparation, you've got filing of motions, how you can make sure that it's clear between you and the client, specifically what it is you're doing and also what you're not doing, and then, you know, how to convey that and also put that into the agreement. So would you be able to share a little bit more about specifically these types of options? I'm not sure if you're doing flat rates or if you're doing hour by hour. I mean, we could talk a bit about that, and then how to make sure that you have that meeting of the minds, both you know, in communication with the client on expectations and also in the agreements that you create.
Right. And I take a generic retainer agreement, and then where there's, you know, one part in there in the recital when it talks about the services that you offered, and I do a bullet point and I discuss in plain language, you know, what I'm signed up to give for them. And if I've come to a flat rate agreement for them, then I also, and I say it there, but then I say, you know, if it goes beyond this, it becomes an hourly rate, and I set my hourly rate there, and I set my paralegal. You know, last month I hired a paralegal to come in Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. Wasn't quite ready for the, you know, the finances of hiring somebody full time, but I recommend this, that it really is very, very helpful. There are a lot of people out there that were paralegals. They had children, and the kids are a little bit older now, and they're ready to get back into the workforce, but not necessarily full time. And they have great institutional knowledge that you can use for your small firm that you're starting, you know, at a discounted rate, because you offer them the flexibility of when they can work, and they can go, you know, run to school if somebody is sick and they're not there full time. So that's just a tip that I've learned is that you can get partial and part-time help. But getting back to the retainer agreement, laying it out for them and then saying, because I've done this before and I've seen, helping somebody with an application to change visitation morphs into, filing an opposition to the cross motion that gets applied from the other side, more to filing, a cross motion to the other side's motion to reduce child support based on, the proposed change in dates, morphs into, a plenary hearing on underemployment of the spouse. And because I can foresee that those are the possible things, I talk to them about that. And I say, and if you need me to, oppose any cross motions, that will be done on an hourly basis. And here's the hourly basis. And I find that makes it a lot easier when you go back to them because they send me back, oh, Tom, they filed a cross motion. What do I do with this? And I said, well, in our retainer agreement, if you want me to handle it, we agree to an hourly basis. And that should I put the, $1,200, retainer, towards this, that you gave me your credit card and I told you I would not use it, without your, permission. And that's the way that I structure that. And I found that helps because so often an unbundled service, leads into something else. And you have to be judicious about your time to not take on even responding it with a letter to the opposing attorney where you're hooked in to representation on that issue. My letters to court too. When I file my notice of appearance, I make sure to say that I'm specific and say I'm appearing for the limited purposes of filing this motion. Appearance at any oral argument or opposition to any responsive pleadings, would require a separate retainer and a separate notice of appearance, from myself. And, that makes it that much easier when you get the call from court and say, Mr. King, your client is here and we're having an oral argument, why aren't you here? And I say, well, Judge, actually, I sent you a letter, 2 weeks ago when we were noticed, and I attached, both my retainer agreement and my notice of appearance, where I was very specific, that my representation was only for, the submission of the pleading and not for any oral argument. If my client would like, I would appreciate if you would make him aware, that he could ask for an adjournment and hire me to appear for the oral argument. But I haven't disregarded the court's instruction, to be there. And I've never run into a court or a judge or a clerk that hasn't been, apologetic, for, oh, Mr. King, well, yes, I do see that is the case. You don't need to appear today. Your client is appearing pro se. So those are the things I've learned.
Yeah. And, Tom, I think that we're getting at something really, really important here, that, especially New Jersey, New York, I guess so certain states that it's still difficult, like Texas, very, very conservative states, but then other states like California, Washington, Oregon, Massachusetts, where the courts, the judges, and most of the entities involved, especially on the state level, are 100% supportive of attorneys being willing to offer unbundled and limited scope services, yeah, because it's their view that, with so many pro se litigants filing in family court, we're at 70-80% in many courts, most courts across the country, that it's their view that that client would be better off having an attorney helping them with part of the case than none at all.
Yep.
And that's why
absolutely.
Yeah.
And in New Jersey, it depends on the county and depends on the judge and their, their tradition. We have, some of the poorest neighborhoods, surrounding, some of our counties and some of the wealthiest. And there is unfortunately a difference in what sort of you know, the responsibility of attorneys, at least viewed by the courts, depending on where you're at. And, you know, I'm aware of those differences. Some of the counties, you know, I know it's not going to be a problem. And others, I'm like, no, I'm sending them an extra letter, you know, when I've got something, you know, and automate, you know, those letters. So you're not rewriting it, you know, letter to court, you know, limited appearance. And there's an advantage of being able to do unbundled services, but there's a little bit of extra, you know, CYA that you need to do as well.
Yeah, and so this would be useful as well. So how do you, let's say you have a court that you know that, well, maybe you could start with, you know, how do you identify? I mean, is it kind of, you figure out, or you get to either because you know the judge, or because you start trying offering unbundled services in certain courts and see how they respond. How do you identify which courts are going to be more accepting of attorneys? And again, you know, we all know that the ethics opinions say you can do this, but again, I think right. the bottom line is the judge believe that.
Right.
You know, like you said, they have more of a more traditional approach. Like they're a little bit, you know, the way they've been doing things for years and maybe haven't adapted to what we've talked about before, which is the internet changing the way so many people are filing in the courts. And so, you know, those two things haven't melded yet, right? So how do you identify which courts you're going to have some challenges with, and what are some of the things that attorneys can do to overcome those challenges in those courts? When is it maybe not worth it, if ever? And maybe you can just shine, you know, give some insights on, you know, just managing this like evolving, you know, system where, you know, some courts are evolving quicker than others when it comes to, you know, allowing attorneys and making it easy for attorneys to offer unbundled.
It's the culture of the county. And a lot of times it's socioeconomic, and it's whether or not I'm the first trailblazer, you know, the first time, you know, that I've, you know, explained, you know, to clerks that, you know, no, I represent on unbundled, you know, basis. Here's, you know, I'll refer to them to our ethics opinion, and our Supreme Court has, you know, issued some wonderful supportive language about the need, you know, for unbundled legal services in order to meet, you know, the needs of, you know, of all citizens and yada yada. But if they haven't seen it, they're not used to it. What they're used to is, hey, there's an attorney of record, and you know, you're not relieved until somebody else steps in your shoes. And being, you know, proactive when the case moves beyond your representation to document it, you know, with the court. And you can't, at least in New Jersey, I can't buy that letter, say I no longer represent them. You know what it is? It's sort of the other way around, where the extent of my representation has now ended on its own. And and that's what I make sure to tell my client, because I've seen them, you know, on the letter to court when there is something that has happened, and it's usually an oral argument that, you know, wasn't a part of our agreement.
And then on the flip side, have you found a lot of courts and judges that are very, very supportive and make it really easy for you to, you know, offer these types of options as well?
Absolutely. There are some courts that, but then on the other side of that, there are also courts that I'm representing somebody, you know, not on an unbundled basis, and, the case has been put over a couple of times, and then somewhere between there and now, they've kicked me out as their attorney. So I make sure to keep my receipts for, the appearance fee, because they say, well, Mr. King, we don't have a record of you, you know, representing, you know, Mr. Smith. And I'm like, well, Judge, here's my notice of appearance. I know it's been 8 months, but the matter has just been put over 3 times, and you're the third judge, you know, sitting, you know, to hear this case, but we're finally here. And I am, you know, I should have been noticed, you know, of the whatever it is that was sent to court, and I'm here now.
Okay, awesome.
So some courts are more open to it than others. But if you write your letters, you document your retainer well, you put it in, you know, to your notice of appearance that you're representing on a limited basis, and state what those limits are, I haven't had a problem with a judge requiring me to appear, beyond that.
Yeah.
And that's what we've heard from, you know, 99% of attorneys across the United States. So this is not unusual. In fact, I would say probably New York, New Jersey is probably one of the more challenging areas because, and I know they're evolving because for a long time they didn't like the whole idea of limited scope, and that's shifting, you know, tremendously from what we've heard from other attorneys offering these options throughout New York. And so, you know, this is probably one of the, besides Texas and I think a couple other southern states, where you would really run into many issues at all. And so it's really helpful to hear your perspective on how to work with courts that are a little bit slower to adapt to these shifts in the industry.
Right. And those are cultures for the whole state. And it's reflected in, you know, New York and New Jersey's, you know, resistance to change. I mean, there's a lot of arcana that, you know, that goes on in both of these states. And it's an adherence to tradition. It's part of it is, I believe, even a, you know, it's a burden of entry for people, you know, to learn this, you know, strange system with all these handshakes. And it definitely hews away from justice, in my opinion, but it's a system that we have, and it's going to make it less open to, you know, some of the changes such as, you know, unbundled representation.
Okay, great. So maybe we can take a little bit different perspective on, you know, how to, you know, be effective at offering these options, not from the courts, but also from the clients. You gave a really good illustration visually where you have, you know, retainer agreement that, you know, is these are the services we'll be providing, and then you're just adding bullet points about the specific types of options you're offering. Maybe you can talk just a bit about, you know, how you communicate with the client about maybe from the very outset, you know, you receive the lead, you talk to them about their case. How do you, you know, start to ascertain whether you're going to be taking more of an unbundled approach or full representation? Is it really come down to their financial budget, or is there other factors where, that you consider with, you know, working with people initially unbundled or full rep, and then maybe, you know, describe how you explain that to them and break it down?
Right. There's you know, how you filter the leads that come in is important to your success. And I get somebody in, and everybody starts, you know, at the same level that, hey, I'm going to talk to you about what your needs are. You know, I think that they've gone and they've called and sought out, you know, an attorney through Unbundled because they're price conscious. They're conscious about getting bang for buck. They would rather have, you know, that sort of conversation and be more involved about their about who's representing them. And when I call them, it's a, you know, I try and call back as soon as I can. I find that if people call you late at night or on the weekends, they absolutely love it. If you've called them back on a Sunday evening, and you know, those are people that I, you know, almost always are able to sign up. Simply because they've shown, you know, I've shown to them, hey, you know, I'm accessible and I care about, you know, your legal issue. And when I get them, I have a ballpark.
Let me just press pause on that. I don't want to break your thread, but a lot of attorneys feel like, well, if I call them on, you know, Sunday or Saturday and call them right back, then that's going to, you know, set a precedent going forward that they can just call me whatever they want. And
yep,
so some attorneys do it.
And,
okay,
so you know, it absolutely does. But, you know, you let things go to voicemail. You know, and if it becomes a problem, you talk to, you know, talk to them and say, okay, I hear what you're saying, but it's very difficult for me to track what, you know, this particular issue. It's much easier for me if you send it to me in an email. And I have that discussion with people when I'm, you know, discussing how I give people my cell number. But I tell them, you know, use this to, you know, say that you've arrived in court. You know, use this if it's a short thing, you know, same thing with sending me a text. But if there's something substantive that you need to talk about or whatever, send it to me in an email. Because if we've had that conversation and you've called me, I have to write it down and then I have to save it to my case management software, and that's going to cost you money. So it's much more efficient for you. It's much less expensive for you if you send it to me in email. And at one point you need to start screening your calls. You know, there are people that, yeah, if you pick up the phone and you talk to them in order to get the sale done, I won't necessarily always pick up their call. If they call in, it's like, okay, let's see what they've said, because I have to be able to manage my time.
Yes.
And that's definitely an issue. usually after you have that one conversation that, you know, I always want to be available to you, you know, but there's a difference between an emergency and just, you know, to complain that, you know, he was 5 minutes late to drop the kids off at the police station, you know, what should I do? You know, send that, you know, he's 5 minutes late, let's document that. And the best way for us to document that is by email. And so it is, you do need to be judicious with your time, but, you know, when you're calling up a new lead, you know, the sooner the better. Even if I can't call them, I try and send them a text message, you know, like, got your message, I'm busy this afternoon, is it good for me to call, you know, between 5 and 6 tonight? And I like to do it with a question so that they see it, they get active, they send something back to me. And getting back to when somebody comes in, if I want them as a client, and I'll usually want them like as a client because you know I believe that they have a need, you know, for the system. I don't necessarily care, you know, a right or a wrong, but usually it's you know, a mother or father who wants to spend more time with their kid, or that, you know, can't afford their payment, or needs more money to help raise the kids. So I want to be able to help them, and I will work with them if they can't afford the, you know, $2,500 that I would charge for a, you know, downward modification of child support. You know, say, well, you know, let's do this. I can send you a link to the forms. You can start to fill them out. When you get stuck, you know, we'll set the meter running, and you can just pay for me, you know, on an hourly basis, and I can walk you through this. You know, when we get done and we file this together, I'm really going to try and convince you, you know, to pay me, you know, for my appearance for the day to go into court, but let's work out something. I have found that people will either take that, or they'll start that, and then they'll say, you know, Mr. King, you know, just want you to handle it for me. Something else that I do is I'm willing, you know, I use LawPay, I use LawPay with their monthly billing option. I think you pay an extra $10 a month to use them, and I have it set up, you know, that I have people that are paying me $75 a month, you know, and they're going to be paying me that for the next 3 years. But, you know, it adds up each month when you've got, you know, 5 or 6 clients that are paying you on a small amount. And I even let them know if there's a month that you can't make that payment, don't worry about it. You know, I hit the button, we pause it for 1 month, and then it kicks back in. That has worked for me, to, you know, help maximize, you know, the leads that I'm giving and feeling like I'm giving good service, but also getting paid.
Okay. So that's really, really key. And let's cover that. And I think what you said just a minute earlier, we were just at the, you know, the Clio Cloud Conference, and they, you know, one of the things that Clio is doing really well is they're, you know, tracking, you know, anonymously, you know, data and surveying, you know, clients, thousands of clients on what it is that they're looking for in a lawyer. And one of the things they asked the, you know, clients was, you know, what are the number one reasons why you hire an attorney? And, you know, lawyers might say, well, you know, they might want to have someone that was, you know, magnum cum laude, number one in their class. They might make a decision based on their website, you know, and there'd be all these different things. But as it turns out, the number one reason why clients retain an attorney is because they respond to them right away. That was the number one reason. And so I'm not surprised when you say someone submits something on a weekend or a late night that they almost always retain, because they're so impressed by the fact that you're willing to get back to them at times that otherwise weren't. And so, and then again, like you said, that creates some, you know, so you have to set expectations around that going forward. But, you know, like, you know, that's your highest, I'm not surprised that's your highest converting lead, but that's the number one reason that clients retain attorneys, is because they respond immediately. Second one was free consultation. Third one was offers fixed fees, unbundled services.
Yeah.
The very last one in the entire list, and there was about 10, was they have a great looking website.
Okay.
So yeah, it's finding that balance, right? You know, like, yeah, you want to have boundaries. You may need to screen the call, and maybe, you know, it could create a few clients that overstep that boundary, and then you have to address that. But when you when you really take a step back and look at, well, how many clients was I able to retain that I otherwise would have hired someone else because I was willing to respond to them on a Saturday in the afternoon or Sunday, and maybe even just a quick call, just say, hey, I got it, let's set up a time. It may not even have to be an involved call, but you know, when you really look at how many clients that have come on board specifically for that reason, you know, I'm sure it balances out in the end, does it not?
Right, it does. And managing your time, taking time, you know, there's time during the day when, hey, I'm going to take 3, 4, 5 hours during my day, and I turn my phone off because I have to get, you know, there are some things that just require large blocks of uninterrupted time. There's, you know, a lot of freedom with being a solo, but it means you end up doing a lot of work on the weekends. But then for that, I put my, you know, son on the short bus every morning at 9 o'clock. And so there are trade-offs with unbundled with, you know, clients that call you that you may not, you know, be able to bill because you've given them an unbundled service. But I've calculated that in, and I try and be efficient in my responsive, you know, ness. There are some people that feel like, you know, hey, they've given you, you know, $800. They should be able to call you any time of the day and get an immediate response. And, you know, I have talked to people and said, if you're not happy with my services, you know, I've been keeping track of my time, and I want to run through them with you. If you had hired me on a, you know, regular retainer basis, you know, where we would be at versus what you paid and what you agreed to. And if you're not happy, you know, then, you know, I would refund you, you know, if the amount of your, you know, unbundled service fee, which is never, you know, if we've gotten to that point, it's because they have been calling, they have been demanding, and not every client you're going to make them happy during this process because they're under a lot of pressure. They don't understand the system. You know, when you offer to say, listen, you know, if you need to find another attorney who would be better suited, you know, to meeting your needs, then, you know, we can unwind this thing and no hard feelings.
Sure.
That's a conversation you have to have every once in a while.
Yes. Okay. So there's a couple other things I really want to cover, and you know, I feel like we could have this conversation for hours. So I'm going to focus on those things. One of the things you mentioned was LawPay and offering payment plans. That's something we could certainly unpack, but that's been covered in a number of different previous episodes. So okay. I'll just invite listeners to listen to, for example, the episode called "Scaling Up Your Practice." From solo practitioner to small firm in 3 months. We talked to Rhonda and Jay Srinaidu, and they gave a lot of statistics on what, you know, offering payment plans can do for your practice, how many more clients you can bring on, what are the actual numbers on default, and how to use LawPay to do automated billing. So that's a really, you know, valuable aspect of attorneys offering and being willing to work with people. So, but I would encourage, you know, you listeners that haven't heard that episode to check that out, because you can get a lot of information on payment plans, auto billing, and LawPay. What I'd like to focus on a little bit more here with you, Tom, is a lot of attorneys are doing, you know, unbundled services under flat rates. What I'm hearing is that you tend to do unbundled options more of an hour by hour and then transition to hourly. And maybe what I'd love for you to talk a bit about is just, you know, when you offer one option, I'm not sure, maybe you can clarify if you're doing it hour by hour or if you're starting off with the flat rate. And then when it goes to the next step, how do you transition from, if it is a flat rate, to an hour by hour, or is it always hourly? And how do you just take a new retainer, or how does it, because, you know, like you said, a lot of these clients will start with unbundled. And we just had Anthony Sanders on the last podcast episode, the Try It Before You Buy It. And he says he offers an unbundled option, and then 90% of the clients then retain him for full representation after that. I mean, it's just like option to retain.
I wouldn't say that I'm 90%, but definitely a good amount. And I talk to people, you know, and if they, you know, if you want an unbundled, if you want a flat rate, I will give you the flat rate for this. But after I've talked to them about what, you know, what I've got, they say, you know, I can say, you know, generally, you know, I do these all the time. I know this judge, you know, from what you've told me, you know, it's going to cost, you know, this much money. It's going to cost you, you know, $1,750 to, you know, make an application for full custody, you know, based on, your ex not seeing your kids, you know, for the last 2 years, you know, but if he raises a you know, a vigorous defense, you know, and brings in, you know, a big law firm, I can't offer, you know, a flat rate, you know, through disposition on this, because we just don't know what the response is going to be. And I can offer you a flat rate, you know, to prepare the paperwork and submit the pleadings. But if there is, and I can offer you a flat rate for my first appearance, but if in the interim, you know, there, you know, we get hit with a cross motion, you know, hey, you know, he decides to pick up the phone and make a, you know, an allegation to Child Protective Services, you know, that's, that is outside the scope of this. And you know, and when that happens, we can discuss it. But here's my retainer, and it's not a flat fee. Although if you want it to be a flat fee, you know, absolutely you can do that, but it's going to be, you know, more narrow in scope.
You do that because it makes it a little bit easier for you. And by the way, I think I misspoke a bit when he said 90%, it wasn't all for forestation, but they hire for additional services. A lot of it's forestation because, you know, it gives people an opportunity when you're offering these more unbundled type of services or doing one piece to get a feel for what it's like working with you and to get comfortable working in your practice. And so, you know, what I like about the fact that you're doing hourly is it seems like it's really easy for you to offer the next service, because then they just can replenish or use what hasn't been billed and so forth. And it makes things really simple.
And it does what it is. If somebody comes in for a prenup, you know, that's a flat rate. You know, if somebody comes in for me to review their adoption paperwork, you know, that's a flat rate. If there are some services that really lend themselves to flat rate, but if you're looking for, you know, in the end you're looking to get an order, you know, that says something, it's very difficult, you know, to give a flat rate because you just don't know what the opposition is. So the best as an attorney that you can do is say, can you offer you a rate for this and this, but understand that if the other side, you know, files a motion, it has to be hourly because you just don't know, you know, the requirement for, you know, your response. And that's just where we're at.
Absolutely. Okay, great. I appreciate that you sharing that, because there's a lot of attorneys that do flat rate by flat rate, but it seems like if you're doing each task comes up, then you have to quote a new flat rate. You have to quote a new flat rate for each task. And so at a certain point, you might start with, you know, maybe one flat rate to do one thing. But if you're starting to have the client start doing wanting more services from there, it really seems like it makes sense to start transitioning to an hourly or even starting there from the beginning, like you said.
Right. Yep.
So what?
And go on.
So go ahead. Well, you can add in there, and then we'll cover the last thing we're going to talk about here.
I've lost my train of thought there. So go on with your question.
Okay, cool. Well, what I'd love to do also, Tom, is talk just about how you started off with New York, and then went back to New Jersey, and some of the, you know, we've had a lot of attorneys come on recently. Alex Keenan out of Albany, New York, who has hired contract lawyers and started to expand into other, you know, regions by, you know, handling all the enrollments himself and then, you know, assigning them to the contract lawyers if they are more local than he is, because his office is way down in Poughkeepsie and he also handles Albany and Saratoga. So a lot of times, you know, having him, those clients work with a contract lawyer could be a better fit, for example. And so, you know, we've had some attorneys have some success with that, but at the same time, there's some certain challenges. Especially if you're running a solo firm and you're trying to do things yourself, there's a lot of challenges to expanding to new regions. And initially, at least when we first gave a shot with New York, that didn't quite work for you. You talked about the commute. And so maybe, you know, we can talk just a bit about, you know, why maybe opening up a new region that was a little further didn't work. And, you know, some of the cautionary things to consider when you're looking at expanding a new region. Obviously, we could have maybe looked at a different approach of having a lawyer in New York that's a contractor. Maybe you could have done, we could have explored that as a more feasible option. But maybe you could just talk about, you know, why maybe that didn't work out for you personally as a solo firm trying to handle something that was a little bit further away.
Yeah. And I did try to work with contractors, you know, and I had a couple of people, and it's just difficult with the whole nature of the family law issues that I was running into, and it just became, you know, unwieldy, and it ended up not being profitable enough for me to sustain, and it became easier. You know, I was just in New York, and then I was in New York and New Jersey. And I, you know, and then I called Graham and said, you know, I would rather spend the extra time and effort, you know, getting the New Jersey clients. Let's lay off of the New Yorks. I was spending more time on them than I was on my New Jersey clients for the same, you know, for the same fee. If I was perhaps a better manager, if I was perhaps, you know, a better organizer and distributor, that model would work. But for me, I guess all my exes would say I'm a control freak. I like to be in control of my file and my client and that relationship and the legal services that I give to them. I think that they appreciate that, the sincerity of that one-on-one that brings, you know, personal, satisfaction to me, and the kind of law that I like to offer. You know, I chose family law because it's very personal, as opposed to, you know, contract law or staying in other areas. And I like that, the feedback that you get from being able to help somebody. And, you know, Unbundled certainly gives me leads that, you know, enable that. And so there's a lot of personal satisfaction that I get from my model that has worked for me. I remember now what I was going to say, you know, as far as my timing. So anybody that's out there, you know, thinking about doing this, a change in careers from one area of the law to hanging your own shingle, or if you're starting off later in life and you've opened this up and say, well, you know, what's it going to take? Again, all I did was burn through cash for the first year. And every book and everybody that I talked to said it's going to be about 2 years before, you know, I'm meeting my nut. With Unbundled, it was, you know, like 16 months. And so within, you know, 4 months of us signing up was the first month that I said I've earned as much as I spent, you know, being a single father with three kids and, you know, renting office space from a local attorney in town. And so that was a real blessing when the business option, you know, opened up for me.
Yeah. Well, that really means a lot to us that, we were able to make the difference for you, Tom. I mean, obviously we couldn't be happier with the way you've been working with the clients and just, you know, the feedback we've got, and it's been a real pleasure working with you personally. And so, you know, if we had any part to play in helping you be able to sustain the solo practice and serve as many clients as you do now, that feels really great. So I'm so happy to hear that. And so I want to finish this final piece here, and then maybe we can wrap it up. I really appreciate your time today and sharing so openly how you've been overcoming and working with these challenges and the benefits of working with clients on a bundled basis. You mentioned that you wanted, and by the way, when you said, you know, maybe I'm more of a control figure, maybe I'm not much of a manager, I think that's common. You know, like a lot of people aren't, you know, they may be really great at practicing law, but, you know, being a manager of other people isn't in the skill set. I think it requires a whole different set of skills, a whole different set of problems and challenges that, you know, are not going to be a good fit for some people. And so that's why I really appreciate, and I wanted to expand on, like, well, why did this not work for you? You know, it's because, so attorneys can think about it for themselves and say, well, do I want to manage a contract lawyer? Do I want to think about, do they have work? Do they not? How do I hand it off? Are they doing a good job? You know, like, there's a lot of other skills that go in. Obviously, it gives you the capacity to leverage your income because, you know, they make, you know, a certain hourly rate. You get a, you know, an hour by hour on what the work that they're doing. And so, yes, you can create a leveraged income, but it also comes with a cost, and it's really important to weigh out that cost. I'm wondering if there's anything you recall specifically about hiring contract lawyers that didn't work for you personally, whether it was because you didn't really like, you know, you didn't like the fact that you weren't working with those clients personally, which is certainly a very good reason, you know, to not work with a contract lawyer, because you don't have the ability to know, you know, how are they really getting treated? Are they really getting the help that they deserve? Are they really an extension of who, you know, what I want to see my clients experience, right? So there's that piece. But, you know, is there anything else that, you know, maybe along those lines, or anything else that you recall that made it not work,
you know,
for you to have contractors?
Was timing too. You know, I would have a new client, you know, they would have, you know, an appearance, you know, in Brooklyn, you know, on XYZ. I would plan on having one attorney do it, and Maybe I waited too long. They weren't able to be there. Then I end up calling around and finding somebody. And then the last minute, you know, I end up having to go on the case myself anyway. And maybe if I'd taken more time, to develop, to find the right contractor. But it seemed like it was half of it just throwing my hands up, saying, "Well, I guess I'm going to have to go anyway," and then I would go. And maybe having the right stable of contractors in certain regions that can help you, might be key. But again, the model didn't work for me, concentrating on the cases that I do get and cultivating those, has. And, I get a lot of referrals, for, people that came in through Unbundled. So it's not only the Unbundled leads, but then what they lead to in themselves.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so thank you for your perspective on that, Tom. I think that's really, really helpful, because I think there's a great upside to hiring contractors and expanding to new regions and handling more clients, but it also comes with its set of challenges as well. And it's really important that, attorneys think through those challenges before making the decision to, bring additional attorneys on. And there's another episode we did with Dave Gross out of Vancouver, Washington, one of our attorneys there. It's called, Chronicling the Journey from Solo Practice to Small Firm, Limited Appearances, Hiring Contract Lawyers, and Scaling Up a Practice. And he talks about some mistakes that he made, hiring contract lawyers and how much time you really got to put into finding the right contractor to work with. Because if you don't, it can really, be a poor representation of your firm, and it also lead to a lot of problems and yep. headache that don't make it worthwhile in certain scenarios.
Yep. Very real.
Yeah. Okay, and then I guess the final thing, just briefly want to touch on, because we haven't talked about it a whole lot on the podcast, is just doing limited appearances. You've offered that to a lot of your clients. In fact, you've from what we've talked about earlier, it's something that you really highlight as a benefit, and really can try to encourage clients to have you come in to make that appearance for them, and especially if they have another a lawyer on the other side. Maybe you could just talk just a little bit about how that works with your clients. And then making sure that they understand it's for that one appearance. And then if it gets held over, what happens then? And just some of the practical strategies for doing that effectively.
Right. And I make sure that they're aware in the retainer if that this is for one appearance and it's for dispositive appearance. And if it's happened where we've waited, until, 5 o'clock, we've been there since, nine, and the judge hasn't been able to see us. This happened on a case, in Bergen County, one of the busier dockets, and, the judge had just been inundated with, emergency orders and wasn't able to see us. And because I knew it was going to be a problem for my client, I explained to, the clerk, that, I'm here on an unbundled basis, for my client. They've paid for today. And I don't know if they're going to be able to pay for this, for an appearance. Is there any chance that the court would allow me to appear, by teleconference? And I will, I'm not going to charge my client for that, but I can't come down, next week and sit here at 9 o'clock and maybe not be heard, until 3 o'clock, because of the relationship that I have with my client. And, she said, well, let me speak with the judge, and the judge agreed. And, the for the next appearance, the court, called me when it was, the case was being heard, and I was able to put my arguments and make my appearance and, help mitigate the cost exposure for my client. It is something that you have to be, careful of. I'm not above, telling clerks, my client is on limited budget, and, if there's a chance that the court's not going to see us until after lunch, can we adjourn it now? And have a what we call a ready hold, so that we know that we're going to be on, next week at 10 o'clock, because it doesn't work for my client and, financially to have us, sitting and waiting. And so I try and work as much as I can with the court officers, to get my client heard first. And if they can't be, to, you know, ask for the courtesy of being told earlier rather than later, and then maybe re-adjourning with a ready hold for the next appearance.
Okay, great. And you know, that sounds like some of the challenges you've run into. On the whole, have you found that it's been a real benefit to your clients and for your practice, you know, also economically, to offer limited appearances as an option? Because there are some attorneys that will only do the document preparation and coaching, but don't do the appearance. And that may have, there are some states, like you said, that, you know, maybe some of the judges have been a little bit slower to adopt or accept or be willing to work with attorneys that are doing just one appearance. So you have to take into consideration your local courts, as we just discussed. But for you, you know, given in the courts that this has worked well, how has this been for you economically and for the clients?
You know, absolutely. Economically, it's been good. It's worked out for me. I enjoy that part of the practice. And, you know, two pleadings, you know, that are completely equal. And, you know, if somebody goes in pro se, you know, it's amazing how judges, just being human, don't give a pro se applicant the same deference they do if there's an attorney, and especially if there's an attorney on the other side. And I try and, you know, explain and give a couple of war stories to, you know, what happens when you show up, you know, without somebody there to represent you. And, you know, in getting and saying it's, you know, your best bang for the buck is to have me appear. And, you know, so I definitely put a hard sell on that, and it's good for me, and it's good for my clients, and it's good for my business. And definitely, you know, even if it's just a limited appearance on that one day, if I know it's going to be that, I try and tell the court that in my, you know, introduction letter, you know, I've been retained in this, yada, yada. You know, and if, you know, as a courtesy, you know, my client is on limited funds, and if there's a chance, you know, that we won't be heard in the morning, if we could schedule this for, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock. And sometimes calling the clerk, you know, beforehand, so you're not sitting there for 2 hours, you know, they knew that, you know, when the cases were going to be heard, but they just line everybody up. But if you call, you know, and say, well, how's the docket looking? You know, like, you probably won't be seen until 11 o'clock. So, well, okay, let me call, you know, our adversary and see if we can be there at 11, as opposed to getting there at 8:30 and waiting until 11. Being aware that even though you get the notice for a time, that, you know, the call the day before can sometimes free up your time and help you be a better time manager.
Yep, exactly. Okay, that's some really, really helpful information for limited appearances. I think that is an option that more and more attorneys are starting to offer, and a lot of clients are going to feel a lot more comfortable having an attorney be there in court. And the option of being able to do one appearance without necessarily having to have the client commit to the, you know, to more from there, and just kind of take it one step at a time, not only works for them economically, it works for the firm economically, and, you know, something that attorneys that haven't been offering that yet really may want to consider.
Right. And, you know, make sure, again, I don't know who the audience is, you know, for this. If they're people that don't go to court a lot, or if they're newer to the business, you get a lot of business while you're in court. Make sure you've got your cards, because people will ask for them. And, you know, if they see you, you know, engaged with your client, you know, people will ask, and business gets business. And, so definitely, you know, part of being an attorney is going to court and making that appearance. And it's part of growing your brand, you know, within a community.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Tom, you know, I really want to thank you for coming on today. And I really get the sense that you, you know, have been really making an effort and to be prepared to not only, you know, give a lot of suggestions, but also just in the way you've, you know, been openly sharing about some of the challenges and things that attorneys want to look out for. I really like that we're also setting the contrast. You know, there's a lot of ways we can say this is, you know, unbundled's great and limited appearances are great and contract lawyers, but also to make sure that, you know, behold the possibility, but also, you know, beware of the challenges and how to protect yourself and how to set the right expectations and make sure everyone's on the same page, and so that you don't run into challenges and any problems. So
yeah.
It's been really, really, really valuable to hear your perspective on that. And so I just thank you for coming on to share as you have. And I think it's really going to be helpful for a lot of attorneys to hear.
Oh, my pleasure.
So with that, let's go ahead and wrap up. For everyone that's listening to the podcast, we, as always, really appreciate your participation and willingness to continue to learn and grow and improve your practice. As we mentioned, I think on a previous episode, we now have transcriptions of every single podcast on the blog on unbundledattorney.com/blog, or you can just go to unbundledattorney.com and click on the blog link. And so if there's podcast episodes that maybe you haven't got to yet, obviously there's certain ones you're definitely going to want to listen to if they really resonate or is a topic that you want to cover, but now you can also go back, and if there's episodes you haven't heard yet and maybe don't have time to hear them right now, you can go through and read through those transcriptions and, you know, pull out any additional suggestions that you may have not been able to get exposed to. So that's all available for you now. And so with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up, and we will see you all on the next episode. Thanks so much for your participation. For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.